Excuse me. Sorry.
Vidhi yatamashu tathaiva machiram. Giram samadho gagane samiritam. Nishamya vedhas tridashanu vachah. Gam paurushi me shnuta marapunar. Vidhiyatama shuta thaiva machiram. Gam paurushim me shunutamara punar. Giram, a vibration of words. Samadho, in trance. Gagane, in the sky. Samiritam, vibrated. Nishamya, hearing. Vedah, Lord Brahma. Tridashan, unto the demigods. Uvacha, said. Ha, oh. Gam, the order. Paurushim, received from the Supreme Person. Me, from me. Shrunuta, just here. Amaraha, oh demigods. Punaha, again. Vidhiyatam, execute. Ashu, immediately. Tatha eva, just so. Ma, do not. Chiram, delay. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. While in trance, Lord Brahma heard the words of Lord Vishnu vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the demigods, O demigods, hear from me the order of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, the Supreme Person, and executive attentively without delay. Purport. It appears that the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be heard in trance by competent persons. Modern science gives us telephones by which one can hear sound vibrations from a distant place. Similarly, although other persons cannot hear the words of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma is able to hear the Lord's words within himself. This is confirmed in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, first verse. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye. Adikavi is Lord Brahma. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma received the instructions of Vedic knowledge from Lord Vishnu through the medium of the heart, Hrida. The same principle is confirmed herewith. While Brahma was in trance, he was able to hear the words of Kshirodakshayi Vishnu and he carried the Lord's message to the demigods. Similarly, in the beginning, Brahma first received the Vedic knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the core of his heart. In both instances, the same process was used in transmitting the message to Lord Brahma. In other words, although Lord Vishnu was invisible even to Lord Brahma could hear Lord Vishnu's words through the heart. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is invisible even to Lord Brahma, yet he descends on this earth and becomes visible to people in general. This is certainly an act of his causeless mercy, but fools and non-devotees think that Krishna is an ordinary historical person. Because they think that the Lord is an ordinary person like them, they are described as mudha. Avajananti mam mudhaha. The causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is neglected by such demoniac persons who cannot understand the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita and who therefore misinterpret them. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chukshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Krupa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Namam Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Today, or 4 years ago today, I lost my father on Papamochini Ekadashi. And the next day is Dwadashi, and then 11 or 12 days later is Sri Ram Navami. So I request all of you to kindly include that soul in your prayers who played the role of my father. And when you read this purport, and Prabhupada calls someone mudha, certainly my father was a very, very intelligent person. In our whole family, there isn't a person as brilliant as he, who at the age of 5 or 6 could recite over 100 or 200 slokas and knew all the meanings of them. By the age of 19, he had finished his master's degree, went to school only first, straight into sixth grade. Turned out to be a brilliant scientist who finished his PhD in 18 months. It's a record, no one has ever done that in the field of nuclear chemistry or nuclear engineering. Practiced homeopathy for 40 years while he was a scientist, and never charged anyone for any medicine that he gave. He was a brilliant doctor, fantastic musician, self-taught plus learned from somewhere, was a writer for a newspaper as a music critic. Very, very brilliant. He knew a lot about any topic we could talk about. Yet, could not accept that Krishna is a supreme person. Very well read as well. In his final days, when he was bedridden, I was studying 7th canto at that time. And every day I would read Prahlad Maharaj's prayers. Just, I guess, my service to benefit my father in one sense. And as I was reciting the verses or reading from Prabhupada's book, I didn't have to read the translation. As I was reciting the shloka, he knew the meaning and he would say, oh, wonderful meaning, oh, very nice meaning, like that. Very amazing. Yet, had the most difficulty accepting Krishna as a person. I gifted him the Bhagavad Gita. He had the whole Bhagavatam set at home. And because I became a Hare Krishna devotee, I asked him, have you even made an attempt to read? And he showed me the Bhagavad Gita. And he had very systematically read Bhagavad Gita. He had underlined all the key points. And he says, everything is wonderful. But I have so much, over 30, 40 years, read Shankaracharya's teachings that for me, that Krishna is a person is very difficult to accept. And he had made a genuine attempt, but he just could not get over that little hump that Krishna is a person. Why? Because no association. Very amazing soul, but just no association. And any association of mine wouldn't work, because it's very difficult for a father to learn from his son, especially an accomplished father of his stature. Very difficult. There were a couple of times when we had a little argument and he didn't say it, but the message was, you're a kid, what do you know? And so all I thought was, my role would be to be a silent instrument and let Krishna act in his own wonderful ways. Until his final day, or final few weeks, if you will, it just so happened one day I was sitting at his computer trying to send an email to the devotees here, and I happened to pull up the picture of Narsimhadev in Mayapur. And he walked into the room at that time. And he said, who's that? I said, of course you know who that is. He said, yeah, I know Narsimhadev, but where is that deity from? I said, this is in Mayapur. And he got so attracted to that deity in that one moment that he said, can you make that picture the wallpaper of my computer? I said, yeah, sure I can. And from that day on, every day, we would recite Lord Narasimhadeva's stotras. Especially there's a stotra called Narasimha Karavalambam. Karavalambam means to, kara is hand, avalambana means to extend. So the whole stotra is at the end, like in our Brahma Samhita, we have Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. That stotra, the last line is Lakshmi Narasimha Mamadehi Karavalambam. Oh, my dear Lord Lakshmi Narasimha, please extend your arm to me. So he's begging for mercy. And he loved that so much. I don't know how he got connected or attracted to it, that every day we would recite that together for days and weeks. And things just so happened, one after another, that he passed away on one of the most auspicious days, Papamochini Ekadashi. This is the day or Ekadashi where one's sinful reactions are burnt, one who follows it properly. It is very rare for someone to die on an Ekadashi and be cremated on a Dvadashi. It's very rare because you can't cremate on Ekadashi. It's that perfect moment of passing away. He passed away with the holy name, with Prabhupada's chanting, with the Kanthimala of Lord Narasimhadev on his neck, around his neck. How it all came together was just a fascinating thing that none of us could orchestrate or think or even plan for it. And his last rites were performed by a Vaishnav. So this purport has this potency of what's being talked about here. These great personalities called Amaraha. Amara means those who don't die. They were very long lived. The demigods. Very powerful. Very intelligent. Very accomplished. But they have no access to the Lord. They have to rely on a super devotee. In this case, Lord Brahma. And in my father's case, Srila Prabhupada's mercy. It came in some way or the other. One, because he actually had made an attempt to study, although he couldn't, like I said, cross that line. But he had the Bhagavatam in his home. He revered it very much. He became a regular donor for the Juhu temple. But all of that was there. So somehow Prabhupada's mercy found its way into his life. And so this verse is the principle of parampara. Actually, it's a foundational verse. Although it seems simple, that says there was a sound vibration in the sky, Lord Brahma heard it, and he conveyed it to the demigods. Although that's the, I guess, the narrative, the important message is parampara. How does the instructions of the transcendental personality who's on that side of the material atmosphere, how does that message or his instructions come into this world? And this world is a world of temporality. This world is a world of material mind and intelligence. So what's the medium by which instructions that are outside one's capability to even, forget about understanding, even hearing, how do they come into this world? Is the medium of parampara. This is the only way. So Bhagavatam deals with a different system of knowledge. While everything that we learn in a university deals with a whole different system of knowledge. So when you stand in one system of knowledge and look at the other system, it doesn't make any sense. So our system that we are used to in a school or a university is called an ascending system of knowledge. We've heard this from Prabhupada. It's called Aroha. Aroha means to ascend. So it's called Aroha Pantha, the path of ascending. And the path of ascending is, I use my mind, my intelligence, my reasoning capabilities, which is the intelligence, I use them to find out truth. And because I'm using my mind and intelligence to learn about the truth, as time progresses, my understanding of the truth keeps changing. Because my intelligence keeps changing. Because there are other persons who are either more intelligent than I am, or their ability to search has become better, they're more analytical, they're more reasoning, etc. Okay? That's called ascending system. That's what we are taught. We are taught, for example, in school, we're taught a research design. You have to solve a problem. You take some time in first stating what the problem is, which takes a while. It's not easy. But once you state a problem, then you have to create a design by which you will solve that problem. You make certain assumptions. You create a design by which you will go about analyzing and solving the problem. And that works quite well as long as you're dealing with material phenomena. As soon as you go beyond material phenomena into the meta, meta means outside of that, the meta layer of things, the same methodology stops working. So most persons who have an analytical view of the world, when they deal with meta stuff, they think of it as some soft and fuzzy, warm and fuzzy kind of soft things that don't make rational sense. And now here is where the descending system of knowledge has to be applied. Because truth is revealed. Truth is not something that you stumble into or stumble upon. Like you're searching and searching and suddenly, oh, God is a person. Oh, this whole material world is just an illusory thing and there is a spiritual world. One doesn't stumble into these conclusions, ever. One may have an inclination. Is this world really true? Does God really exist? Those kinds of questions might arise, but conclusion cannot come. That's called Siddhanta, right? Siddhanta, the conclusion of perfect knowledge, cannot be stumbled upon. It has to be given or revealed. So the process by which we understand something that's on the other side of matter is called descending system or avarohana, avaroha pantha. And for which we need realized persons. And those realized persons enter this material world on behalf of the Spirit, on behalf of the Supreme Lord. And they reveal to us, along with Krishna, both externally and internally, they work together to reveal absolute truth. Try as much as you want to use the methodology from this side to understanding this side, and it will never happen. Many people have tried and failed and become frustrated. Some people don't even try. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye. They don't care. It's not relevant because it's not visible. It's not something that is their immediate concern. So this whole purpose of parampara is very, very important if one wants to understand the truth. And the parampara system works in a mystical sort of way. Because when we say mystical, people have a little discomfort. Mystical only means it is dynamic, in that sense mystical. It's dynamic in this way. As long as an individual is connected to one's Guru and Krishna, the person becomes a medium for that truth to pass through. And the same person, as soon as they disconnect from their Guru or Krishna, However wonderful they are, however knowledgeable they are, they can't pass it on. I'll detail it even more. Take Karna in Mahabharata. Karna is like the most unfortunate fellow who's always a victim of something or the other, and everyone feels very sympathetic towards him. Everything in Karna's life went wrong. That's how he portrays himself, or that's how the character is portrayed. Now Karna had a special gift that he was an unbelievable and fantastic archer, as good as Arjuna, if not better. But there was one thing that he had as a problem. And the one thing was that at the right time, at the very, it's called pregnant moment, when he has to use his weapons, he will forget the mantras for it. Before it, he will remember. At the moment when he has to fire that arrow, he will forget his mantras. That was a curse by Parashuram. So when he had an opportunity to fire a particular weapon at Arjuna that would have killed Arjuna, he couldn't remember the mantra. It's like, Dehinosmin yatha, are, what's that word? Dehinosmin yatha dehe. You see, forgetting at that moment. I was playing with it, with that. You get the idea. How it, something that you know so obviously, Dehinosmin yatha dehe, komaram yavanam jara. Sometimes it happens that at that critical moment, we forget that one word. And we are like, it's there. And someone has to prompt it. Yes. Yeah? This is how it is. So Karna was like that. So a person who's not connected to one's guru properly may speak the shlokas, may give excellent explanation. In fact, even more detailed and very amazing explanations, but they cannot convey into the heart of the listener attraction for Krishna. It's just not possible. Why? Because their own connection is not there. So this is where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami caution us that do not hear from those who are not connected in parampara. It is like drinking milk that is poisoned. It's white substance. It is milk. When you drink it, it is supposed to nourish you in a particular way, right? It tastes like milk. It looks like milk. It smells like milk. But when you drink it, it does not act like milk. Because sarpo uchishtha yatha payaha. Sarpa uchishtha means it has been touched by the tongue of a snake. Uchishtha means remnants. We take Krishna and Guru's uchishtha, the remnants. But the remnants of milk that has been touched by a snake, don't drink it. Why? It looks like milk, it feels nourishing, but it's not milk, it doesn't act like it. It poisons the heart. So, the poisoning is like, I'll tell you an interesting dream if you don't mind. A few months ago, I dreamt of Gauranga Prabhu. And in my dream, we were having some conversation with Gauranga Prabhu, and he looked at me and he said, when a person drinks milk that's mixed with poison, that poison will act first. And my dream broke. And I've been thinking about it. What does that mean, that the poison will act first? I have yet to write to him. I've been meaning to write to him, saying, hey, it was an interesting thing. But it's a very amazing thought, though, that when we drink milk mixed with poison, which means when we take in Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita messages or spiritual messages through one who's not connected to parampara, more than the message working on the heart, it's the poison, the disconnectedness, that's what will work on us first. Meaning, we may know things here very well, but here will be vacant. And bhakti is a process of the head and the heart together. So this is very critical. This means the sense of gratitude, the sense of service, the sense of loving feelings, because every time Prabhupada writes loving transcendental service, that lovingness will never awaken. They may be very good scholars, no problem. They may be very, very good at analyzing it, no problem. But loving transcendental service cannot awaken. They may put on a show of it too. Because one of the principles in the material world is you fake it till you make it. But the problem is, can't make it. Can't make it into the spiritual world by faking it. It's just not possible. So not only are we supposed to understand these messages, but we are supposed to be able to discern how, who is that person from whom I can learn properly. So then Bhagavad Gita lists a whole list of characteristics of such persons. That they're pure, they're what is inside is what's outside, they live in a transparent sort of way, etc., etc. So this verse is so critical that without this, the 10th canto cannot move on, or this section, because Lord Brahma is playing that role of being the transparent medium by which the demigods can now take instruction. And the medium of that instruction is, it is conveyed in the heart. And Lord Brahma is the person who now tells the demigods, let's follow this instruction without delay. And none of the demigods said, how do you know? How did you know this is right? We were all here. We didn't hear anything. They're all going to be at the banks of the milk ocean offering prayers. They're all there, waiting there. They're offered the Purusha Sukta prayers. And they all look to Lord Brahma, who then turns to them and says, he said he's going to come very soon. Oh, okay. Nobody says, how do you know? Are you sure? Did you hear it well? None of us heard it. How do you know? Because they accept Lord Brahma as that medium. And Lord Brahma has proved again and again how he's that medium, the very original person. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. So they follow. They follow Lord Brahma's instructions. This is how the demigods are showing us, however accomplished one might be, without parampara you cannot understand Krishna's messages. They all accept Lord Brahma's system. Okay, that is how it is. That is what we shall do. So back to that point of being connected, then there is a verse in Bhagavad Gita that talks about being disconnected. Fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Sa kale neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. So that verse has many amazing views or perspectives or angles, if you will. The first two lines talk about how the parampara system works. Evam parampara praptam. Evam rajarshayo viduhu. The great kings, they knew that knowledge was given from one generation to another. Only when the kings were saintly, Rajarshi, Then the next two lines speak about how it breaks down. Sa kale neha mahata, by the power or influence of time, or in due course of time, as Prabhupada writes it, yoga nashta paramtapa. And Krishna uses the word paramtapa for Arjuna. Parantapa means, para means another or enemy or the person opposite of you. Tapa, you can make them uncomfortable or burn them or distress them, because distress is called tapa, you're struggling. So who has the ability to put the person opposite him in distress? So it says, Sir Kalineha Mahata, by the great power of time, this link gets broken. That link, when we think it's broken, it's not that it's broken once and can never be brought back again. Or we think that once it is made, it can never break. It's not like that. It's very dynamic. So, example, when we say at initiation that link is formalized, then we think, now I'm connected, it doesn't matter. Prabhupada gave a beautiful story by his personal servant. He was saying that once Prabhupada was chanting japa silently in his room, and there was only he, his personal servant was with him. And he was like, wow, amazing, chanting japa with Prabhupada. Prabhupada chanted, moved his bead down, all 16 were done, looked at the disciple like this, and put his bead back and said, ha, 16 done. Now I can do whatever nonsense I want. This was Prabhupada's way of exposing such a devotee's mentality. Somehow get it done, and I can do what nonsense I want to do. So connection is dynamic. So actually, if you look carefully during our day, if you analyze the day, our connection is like this. This is, when I was in engineering, we had to draw characteristics of a motor. Each motor had its own characteristics. Induction motor's characteristic was in a particular way. Single phase motor had a different characteristic. You have to draw them so you know how the motor works. So for each one of us, it's some characteristic. For some it is like this. For some it is... for some it is like this. Once in a while it's a little like that. For some persons it is like that. For some persons, although wearing the dress of a devotee, tilak, it's always like that. But each person has their own connection characteristic, if you will. So our duty is, on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, when we are out in the world and we are meeting people, we have to make sure that we are like this. Of course, my characteristic is always like this. Once in a while it's like that in this wonderful association of all of you, but We have to make sure. That's our responsibility as a devotee. Am I connected? As soon as, you know, we walk into the temple or we go to any room, we check. Do I have Wi-Fi connection? Do I have it? Oh, yeah, okay. My email will be here. Everything will be here. Am I connected? So like that. Am I connected? If I am connected, awesome. If I am not connected, then we need to make sure. So we have that connection. We're connected to Krishna, not just in the physical aspects of it or in the mental aspect, but genuinely connected. And what does connection mean? What does it look like? How to make that connection? That the word in parampara, sometimes we use the word sampradaya. The word sampradaya, prada means to give, right? Krishna is called Bhakti Prada, gives. So Prada means Pradayate, Vishnu Bhakti Pradayate, gives. Sampradaya means gives in completeness. And it is said, when the previous generation is moving on, they bequeath, they give all their assets to their next generation. What has the next generation to do to get all of the inheritance? What do they have to do? Huh? Follow their instruction. Actually, it said you just have to be alive. That's when you get it. You have to be alive to get the inheritance. So this being alive, it's as easy. So the first generation, the previous generation, wants to give. The giving, this is inheritance. Each one of us, what have we inherited? We've inherited the Srimad Bhagavatam and the consciousness of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whether I'm alive or not is a different question. Am I alive in the relationship? So the connecting factor, what makes that connection is, you know, any Wi-Fi, it's a secure Wi-Fi. You need the password to connect to that Wi-Fi, right? Otherwise it's an unsecure network. So that password, that connectivity, is a sense of gratitude. A sense of feeling indebted. And a sense of wanting to repay that debt, although knowing I can never repay this debt. Just the sensation of it, that I want to repay this debt. I feel very, very indebted. How much indebted, I cannot explain. But I'm feeling very indebted. That's the connection. And the more we feel as devotees this way, the stronger we are connected. At any point in life, it's a test, that moment. How am I feeling? What is driving me to do what I'm doing every day? A feeling of indebtedness and gratitude. That's the connection. In that spirit, whatever one does, it's that parampara praptam. Otherwise, it's kale neha mahata yoga nashta. It's the links broken at that point or that moment. So Lord Brahma is teaching, Bhagavatam is teaching a very, very essential principle of parampara here. And all the demigods are following. And final point, the words in the verse, he says, Vidhyatam Ashutathaiva Macharam. Vidhyatam means carry out or execute. Vidhyatam. He says, Vidhyatam Ashutathaiva. Very quickly we must follow an instruction. He says, Macharam, without delay. Chiram means long period of time. Macharam means very, not in a long period of time. Immediately, quickly. So there is a sense of urgency that Lord Brahma conveys to the demigods. The sense of urgency is not to accomplish something, but the sense of urgency is Krishna has given an instruction. In this case, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu has given an instruction. Let's quickly follow it. Let's be eager. That's basically the message. Let's be eager to follow that instruction. Because eagerness drives the enthusiasm to execute the instruction quickly. So he's saying, let's be eager, let's be energized, enthusiastic, that we've received an instruction, let's follow it. Any questions, comments? You want to add some points, objections?
I often thought about what you were saying is the difference between a life member and a dead member. and it just kind of resonated with me, you know. But anyways, next person, please.
Giridhari.
Hey Krishna, thank you for class. I'm wondering about studying the scriptures in the context of the descending or ascending process sometimes.
Go ahead. I was going to say something, but thank you for reminding me. Go ahead.
So when we're studying like through like the Bhakti Shastri method, sometimes it's very similar to like the way that the universities teach. Like we just take a test or study and memorize it, and then like kind of do activities like to help learn it. It seems like we're using like the ascending method to understand the scripture, like using our own intelligence and compiling the information and things like that. I think I find value in that, but I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. I was going to say something. Even in the ascending system, when you look carefully, when the greatest of discoveries or inventions were made, they were not, like I said, stumbled upon, but it was at that moment of revelation. I'll give you two examples, two or more. You've heard of Archimedes, the guy who talked about gravity or density. He was struggling with this concept for many, many days of how to be able to define density. He just couldn't figure it out. It was density only, Archimedes, yeah, I think. And he tried this equation, he tried that equation, he tried this thing, and he tried that thing, and nothing, it was just not working out. One day he was sitting in his bathtub, and out of the blue, it occurred to him, this is how it is. He jumped out of his bathtub and ran out onto the street, naked, yelling, Eureka! Eureka! I found out. I got it. So our acharyas explained that it's that moment of revelation. That's what solved it for him. Not his own trial. Okay? So here's where what ascending looks like, and here's what ascending and descending work together, how it looks like. There was a mathematician by the name Srinivas Ramanuja Iyengar. He was from a very, very small village in South India, Sri Vaishnav. And every day, since his childhood, he would write these mathematical equations. And he didn't know where he was getting it from. He was just writing them. They were the most profound mathematical equations that humanity has ever seen. He didn't go to school. He didn't learn anywhere. He was just writing those equations. So his book or whatever he wrote, he was then encouraged. Send it to Oxford University, because at that time it was the thing. So he somehow put it in an envelope in that old archaic postal system, sent it, and it reached Oxford. And in Oxford were the greatest mathematicians of that time. And they looked at Ramanuja Iyengar's work, Srinivas, and it's like, wow, this is what we've been working for 35 years, and we've not been able to solve this. How does this young man do it? Let's call him to Oxford. So they brought him to Oxford. And they told him, okay, because mathematics has to be proven, you have to write proofs. Anyone who remembers going to school and writing proofs, to me it was the most boring thing. And right now I'm teaching Prahlad, and he's like, I have to write a proof. Like, oh man, don't have to write proofs. But you have to prove. This is true because this and this are true, this and this are true, therefore, whatever, the proofs. When Srinivas Ramanuja Iyengar was in the room with the world-renowned mathematicians, and they told him, please give us the proof of how you wrote this. It makes sense. But how did you get there? And he stared at them blankly and said, I don't know how I got there. And they said, well, I'm sorry. That means you've been stealing it from somewhere. It's not your work. No, it comes to me. I said, no, Unless you prove it, you cannot be accepted as a mathematician. But he was telling them, no, these things just come to me. No, no, you have to prove it to us. That was a big debate in Oxford at that time. So this proving piece is that ascending, I'm trying to build it. And revelation works differently. Now when you come to Bhakti Shastri though, it seems like an ascending system because there are elements of it in it. You know, you're memorizing something, you put in your mind and intelligence and you're grasping it, and someone says, question number 4, please write the verse and translation of Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 text 13. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe. And then we write the translation. However, that is only the one aspect of it. But the realization of it has to be gifted. It doesn't come because someone told us Dehi nosmin yatha dehe. So the revelation part works like this. When we apply ourselves to that knowledge, then Krishna reveals. And we all have that experience to some degree or the other. May not be vastly deep understanding, but simple understandings of things. The existence of the soul. We're all operating on the basis of the existence of the soul. No one has seen the soul. No one can describe the soul, right? Krishna says you cannot describe the soul. Yet, we're operating on it. Why? Because there is something, some revelation that says, yeah, it makes sense to me. And it's not logic only, because by logic, you don't prove anything. But it helps you move in the direction of. So, what we call Shraddha, faith, is nurtured by that revelation on this side, and on this side our faith is nourished by our application. It works both ways, not just application. There has to be that revelation from Krishna or by Guru. Then it is nurtured. So it feels on this, when you look at it from this side, it feels like it's an ascending system. Oh, I have to learn these verses. But by learning and repeating them, on this side, Krishna reveals the knowledge if he so desires. Because I'm learning and repeating them out of my sense of indebtedness. Oh, I'm learning something about that which is on the other side of what I can grasp. So that is the verse. Atasri Krishna Namadi na bhavet grahyam indriyer. One cannot grasp anything about Krishna by one's blunt senses. Sevan mukhehi jivhado. Sevan mukha means that sense of indebted and want to reciprocate by offering service. Then Krishna reveals. So even in Bhakti Shastri, when we study, not because I want to know the subject matter, which is of course nice, but more so I can apply myself to be a servant of Krishna. That's the one that should be the operating element. Otherwise we'll know the subject matter from a knowledge perspective, but not from an application perspective. So both are necessary. Anyone wants to add to it? Oh, a lot of hands. Hey, Jai Baldev also, I wanted to ask something. So there's Jai Baldev, Subal Prabhu, Paramakaruna, and Karunanidhi Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your class. It was nice to hear, in general, I like to hear personal stories about devotees, so thank you for sharing that story with your father.
Well, it was just there, so.
That was a very inspirational story. I had a comment on that, but I have many comments, of course, always, but one important thing I'll edit down is that you were mentioning that if we're not connected to the Parampara, or someone who's not connected to the Parampara, then naturally, it's like milk touched by a serpent, I think it was called in that verse.
Yeah.
So one thing that came to mind, I'm, of course you remember, I think you did that seminar about the 24 gurus.
Yeah.
And one funny thing that came to mind is that we would never tell a spider, my dear spider, before I take lessons from you, you know, do you have diksha from the Guru and Parampara? or anything. We take lessons from many places, and surely it seems like we could take lessons from people outside. We could become very arrogant. The reason is, I'm thinking of a pastime where Prabhupada took his disciples to the hospital with him. And the doctor said to Prabhupada, "You swamis pray too much." And the disciples became furious. "You know, you're committing an apparat against a pure devotee." And Prabhupada said, "No, Krishna is speaking through him. He may not be following the four regular principles. He may not be connected to Parampara." So how are we supposed to, what are some steps we could do to develop this humility that, you know, because that's the tendency when someone's not connected or not following the four regular principles. We think we're more enlightened than them, and we become very offensive and disrespectful, sometimes even to devotees, but what's to speak of people outside? So how does one know when they're connected to the Lord? Because a lot of times we deceive ourselves, you know, we become very disrespectful.
Well, we know we are connected to Krishna when we see everything in relation to Krishna. Relation means connectedness. I'm connected to someone. That's a person who's called relative, because I'm connected to them in some way, bodily way, but I'm connected. So seeing everything in relation to Krishna is a sense of connectivity with Krishna. So it just happens that we get something, whatever it is, money, health, advice, something, we get it. We say Krishna's mercy, Guru and Krishna's mercy, as we say. Why do we say? We may or may not mean it, but we say it because that's our sense of connectedness. We see everything connected to Krishna, that it has come by Krishna's mercy, or something is gone. It's come by Krishna's mercy that way. This is Krishna's mercy upon me. What I do with it, I may not know, but this is Krishna's mercy upon me. There's some lesson for me to learn. A materialist will go through the same situation and may not make that connection. They'll make some other connection. It's my fate. It is just a random event. Today is a good day. Are you having a good day? Are you having a bad day? It's like that. Look. But one who's connected sees everything in relation to Krishna. So the doctor can tell Prabhupada, "Your Swamiji prays too much." Oh, no, it is Krishna's way of saying something. That's how devotee sees. This is Krishna's way of telling me something. That's connectedness. So am I seeing things, or whatever things and situations, in relation to Krishna? That's the acid test. Subal Prabhu.
Just a follow up on that question, which was what I was thinking. Actually, I was taking the point of this flickering connection that many of us have to go through. And or something like an unsteady sort of connectivity.
Right.
And how to deal with the one, rationalize this disconnection and see it as part of being connected. You know, that makes it more difficult to actually, you know, overcome that or make the, you know, lapses more, you know, longer to be in the connected part.
So there are two aspects in terms of connectivity with Krishna. One is called orientation, and the second is called attention. If I'm not at all oriented towards Krishna, then I'm not connected. It's like a dish antenna. You have to orient it in the right direction. So first is orientation. And the sadhana bhakti process has both components. One is the orientation part, the rules and regulation. They're all the orientations. Do this and don't do that will allow orientation towards Krishna. And the connectivity part is then what you do in the sadhana bhakti aspects. So both are necessary. However, orientation happens first and connection follows. So as long as, sometimes it happens because there's a disconnect. We're coming with millions of lives, of life births, you know, life and death, millions of lives of disconnectedness. So there is orientation, but just the connection is flickering. So in general, we're oriented. The signals are coming, it's just not taking it. So in the life of a practicing devotee, as long as the orientation is okay, then the connection will become stronger with time. And with not just time, also with intent. But if a sadhaka's orientation is not okay, that is a cause of concern. You deal with it differently. And what makes a person disoriented is life issues or changes or reversals or failing of expectations. These are places where person becomes disoriented from Krishna. And the disorientation is because the basic concepts by which one gets oriented towards Krishna have not been addressed properly. So we know Krishna says, Chaturvidha bhajante mam. There are four aspects by which one comes to Krishna because of distress, financial condition, inquisitiveness and search for knowledge. The fourth is a rare one. Most three, and out of the three, the third one is still there, but the first two are the most reasons, right? People are in distress or they need some financial help. But after that, that may be the entry point for orientation. But after that, those aspects should not be a concern for devotee as much. Not that we're not concerned about our financial condition or distress. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that one should progressively loosen to more of what is my relationship with Krishna and how Krishna operates with devotees. That should become clearer. Otherwise, the smallest of things will disorient the person back. So when there are disappointments, when they are this, and they don't understand that in the material world, this is how things will be, but Krishna's always there. Let me find the connection, how to connect best. That is progressive. So this phenomena will continue till the anarthas are removed. So it takes time. But Rupa Goswami's criterion is not how well, but how eager one is for that connection. That eagerness is what feeds the person further. Does that make sense?
Hare Krishna.
So we are talking about Siddhanta. Then to establish a Siddhanta, the descending process is required, because for the ascending process, Siddhanta cannot be totally confirmed. But
one can't even come towards Siddha, but yes. Mm-hmm.
But and you also talk about the mystical thing. It's mystical thing that disturb the people. So I'm trying to connect the two different things. Why? Because when we go for the different university, big schools, and they are establishing a Siddhanta based on their 40 years or 50 years or 60 years of experience of research, big heads. And they are getting some revelation in the heart.
Sure.
Amazing revelation. And that's why they are putting that reports. And the reason why they cannot accept our thing, because they are disturbed by the mystical thing, the revelation. How can we make them believe that this is true?
So Krishna says in 4th chapter and 7th chapter, 4th is Ye Yatha Mam Prapadyante, and in 7th chapter, that whatever conceptions one has, Krishna strengthens them. Okay? So it depends on, like the radio, whatever channel you tune into, that's the message you'll receive. So their revelation is amazing within the field of matter, sure. No doubt about it. They're amazing scientists. They're amazing persons. Amazingly talented, gifted, thoughtful, all that. But within the realm of matter. If they want to understand something outside the realm of matter, then they need to tune into a different channel. You cannot listen to some other radio station by tuning into some other radio station. You have to tune into that radio station. So there is a process for it. Just as if I want to learn physics, I have to go through a process to learn physics. I have to find the right physicist. I have to write, find book. I have to find the find example. I have to practice. Then I get the revelation. Oh, this makes sense this way. But you cannot stand on this line and make conclusions of that line because they're not on that path. So how much ever you explain, it will not happen unless they open the door for wanting to be oriented that way. So that is why Lord Ramachandra, I'm totally disconnecting it, is called Setu Bandha. Setu is a bridge, right? So the verse in Bhagavatam is about the boat. No? That the great sages travel in this boat, but they leave the boat behind. In Ramayana it's called Setu, there's a bridge. So why is a bridge built? Bridge is built for large vehicles to move from this side of the river to that side of the river, right? But when large vehicles move, once you build a bridge, even the ant can go. That's the greatness of a bridge. So these great acharyas, they build a bridge. That's the setu. And that bridge is that parampara. That is the chant. Then even an ant who has absolutely no cognition of what it is can travel. We're all ant-like people. But the parampara allows for us to travel. That's the setu. So that is where somehow, when we say purity is the force, right? It's the purity within that we carry, even if it is minuscule. It's that purity that orients the person. Without that, a person will never be oriented. This is why salespeople cannot sell books, but devotees can distribute books.
Amazing sense, the bridgeman. I don't want to stretch it, but I'm getting immediate results by my research. I'm getting fame, I'm getting reputation. That blocks me looking at the bridge. Then is this something, what's the homework on our part? Because
what is the
homework from our part? Because how can we convince that big heads, big institutions, that okay, there is a bridge, and this 40 years of research or 40 of department of head or president of college doesn't make any sense. It's very people.
Okay, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the head of a Maha College University in the sense that he was the most educated person. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying in his house. He had no idea this is the personality of Godhead. Gopinath Acharya came and told him, this is Krishna. And what was his answer? Sentimentalists, come on. Then he went to educate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 7 days. Finally, when the transformation happened, and he said, my gosh, I knew so much, but I didn't know anything. And they all said, yes, until you receive Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, what is right in front of you, you cannot see. Cannot see. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his home. He carried him into his home, kept him there, but could not understand. There was no scholar like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya on the planet. So, prasad lesha anugrahita evahi janati tattvam. Prasad lesha, that little drop of mercy is required, which is what Lord Brahma is doing. He's bringing that prasad lesha. He's conveying the message purely. Karunanidhi had a question. Oh. And then Lord Chand Prabhu. Is that all right? It's just been going on and on and on. Today's Ekadashi. Fasting, no?
Yeah.
Is that all right? I'm sorry, I didn't even realize.
Very interesting. Prabhu, I was thinking that
Although Acharya Nishtha sent a note, please end by 8:30. Please forgive me. We went on. Yesterday your text said, please end by 8:30. Whoever, I'm sorry.
Okay. The first line of purport, it is written that only competent person, Prabhupada mentioned, competent person, they can hear through the medium of heart something. So, that in Krishna book also it is mentioned that is only Lord Brahma could hear and all other demigods they could not hear the same vibration. Then only parampara started. Right? Then Brahma injected those things to others.
The parampara had started earlier, but yeah. Yes, this is the method, yes.
Yeah. So, my question is that also in Brahma Samhita it is mentioned that Santa Sadeva Hrudaya Sukhile Kanti. And say every time, no? And Prabhupada also mentioned here that you can talk with Krishna, you can, you know, even a stage will come, you can speak with Krishna. So can, in, but here is a word is used in trance,
Samadhi. So Giram, Samadho, Gagane, Samiratam.
Can you little explain more clearly?
Well, Prabhupada explained that the spiritual master or guru is like the transparent via medium, but the experience for the person is personal, meaning the guru is like the spectacles, is the medium by which that object that cannot be seen, is out of focus, comes into focus. But it's my experience to see the object clearly. The guru or the medium is transparent. So in trance means vyavasayatmika buddhi, that's the trance, samadho. No, not Navidyat. Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana. Then there is samadhi. But there is bhogaishwarya prasaktanam. It's a samadho navidhiyate. It's not possible. So here Lord Brahma's in samadhi means his intelligence, his spiritual intelligence is fixed. That's the verse he spoke, I think, a couple of days ago. The intelligence is fixed on his relationship with Krishna. So he can hear. And so Santa Sadeva, anyone who's in that position can do. This is the greatness of parampara. That it's not just those people can experience and everyone else has to be like, you know, left behind. Every person has the potential to have that experience. This is parampara's greatness. So if we follow the methodology, everyone has the same experience. Well, everyone can hear Vishnu speaking in their heart, or Krishna. Okay, I have to end. You have one final thing, because you've been patiently waiting. I am risking my, my invitation to speak, gone from today, but please,
okay.
Go ahead.
You said the way we stay connected with Krishna is because we are indebted to him.
That's the sense of indebted to Guru and Krishna.
You know, do you mean like as far as what we owe Krishna? You know, when you say being indebted to him, that keeps us connected to him as far as thinking about all the things that we owe him in that way? Is that what you mean?
Well, indebted because he is the one, at least we are understanding little by little, that he is the one who's nourishing us by his love. Both physically, mentally, intellectually, and spiritually, Krishna is nourishing us. And the Guru helps us realize that. So we are indebted to both. And that nourishment comes through the devotees of Krishna. It can come from anywhere. It generally comes through the devotees. But wherever it comes from, the devotee always says, this is Krishna's nourishment for me. He's being kind upon me. He's nourishing me. So that's the indebtedness. So then the relationship means you do something for someone who's doing something for you. So once we say thank you, but above thank you is to offer some service to them. So how can we do the same what Krishna is doing for us? We cannot. So we can never repay that debt. But we work as if we can. Or we try to. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, my apologies. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Now everyone's preparing for the agenda.